Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Hello and welcome again to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show. This is Rahasia, Rahasia Uncensored, where we question their answers. And if you're wondering why I would want to question their answers, think about it. Everything we've been told has ended up being either a lie or at very best misleading. So we're going to have an interesting show tonight because I'm going to start off with playing a little talk that I gave for the Golden Road television show where I have a segment on there almost every month, sometimes twice a month. And the Golden Road television show plays in 10 counties right now. It's working its way up to 12. And this was a little talk that I gave up in Mount Shasta last week. And I think it sort of nails it as far as where I want to take this show. And then we're going to play a couple of clips and just talk about our reality on this planet. Because there's a lot of things going on that people are not thinking about in the right way.
Okay, remember when Michael said you never know what to expect at these meetings? I'm about to show you why he said that. All right. So, I'm Rahasia Poe. You can hashtag Rahasia Uncensored and pull up a lot of what I do. My wife and I, we do the Lotus Guide magazine. I have a radio show called Spiritual Activist on BBS Radio. And I like to reach out and find some of the underlying reasons that why are we so separated? And when you get to the point of being resilient, why aren't we resilient? And I think it's because so many of us feel separated as individuals and we don't see the unity at a deeper level. A while back, I wrote a book called To Believe or Not to Believe, and the subtitle was The Social and Neurological Consequences of Belief Systems. While I was writing that book, I was privy to really research religion and politics and basically our world history. And I noticed that on the surface level, we seem so different and isolated. But I noticed with religions in particularly, if you go back in time and see where those writings originally came from, they start going into more of a unified field. And if you go down even deeper, it gets into another realm, which science is now catching up to. And this brings me to the topic that I'd like to talk about. And it has to do with something that scientists have been looking at. And if you ask most scientists, come up with an explanation right now, what's your best guess is our reality? Well, the popular consensus is our reality is a holographic reality. In other words, a simulation. Now, whether the person doing the projecting is a god or the matrix designer or the great spirit, you could call it a lot of things, but it seems like there is a process going on that is really, really similar to a holographic projection. And one of the things that brings this up and makes it really clear is, first of all, if we were in a matrix, if we're living in a holographic projection, how would we know that? Every single thing that we would use to gauge that and to try to research it is also from the hologram, the simulation. And it is an illusion, albeit a persistent one. It's an illusion. So everything that we would try to gauge it with would also be part of the illusion, so of course it's going to look real. If we're having a dream, in the dream, if we start looking at the dream from the dream state, it looks totally real. So how would we tell if we're actually in a simulation? One of the ways is to see if there's anything underneath the fabric of space that science could tell us. And lo and behold, there is. If you look at the absolute bottom, the atomic and subatomic structure of life. Professor James Gates found an interesting thing, because if you look at the process of what happens on a subatomic level, you can get that process and turn it into an equation. And the equation is very, very long, but I won't even say the whole thing, but the equation is a error-correcting block code. Now, the error-correcting block code is how nature keeps itself intact from the seed to all the whole process. There is an equation that explains that, and it's a very, very definite equation. So one of the people on his staff said, hey, that equation looks a little familiar. And lo and behold, that equation is the same exact equation that we use on the internet when we send an email. That equation grabs all of our data, all of our information, holds it intact, and puts it through the, because we're going through satellites and fiber optics and wires. If this equation didn't work right, we wouldn't get the same data at the receiving end as we do at the transmitting end. Now, why would we come up with the same exact equation that life uses if there isn't a similarity of the same process? This is leading everybody to believe that this is a simulation. And if I had time, I could go into it. There's probably 10 different things that really show us clearly that we're living in a holographic universe. Now, why is this important? Because in a hologram comes from one image. And as that image goes out, you can take any part of that image and create the whole. Well, we do the same thing. We are a direct reflection of the universe in the same way that every DNA in our system could build another me, another you. It is the same holographic process. And this becomes important because if we can recognize this, this undercuts all of the feelings of individuality and separation that we feel in the world. We are part of one unified field. Religions call it God. Everything has a name for it, but it is a unified field of consciousness. And if we can understand this on a nuts and bolts level, where we can actually see an equation, it will help us understand and go deeper into the aspect of why we feel so separate. Why do we feel like all of you sitting out here? It is really, really an illusion that we are separate. We are part of one thing, one being, one consciousness, one energy. That becomes really important to recognize, because if that's true, we are part of one data stream of information, and that data stream goes both ways. So if I'm doing my, whatever it is, prayers or meditation to get in touch with that deeper aspect of myself and really doing the inner work, I'm connecting with that data stream. At that point, my thoughts become very, very important, because in a holographic projection, if you take one part of the hologram, pull it out, it'll reproduce the whole hologram. But if you change that one little aspect, it will change all of the other aspects of that hologram and bleed back up into the main holographic projection. This is why and how we can change this world, by doing the work on ourselves and being conscientious, doing the inner work and the outer work. Events like this are really important. You know, this gentleman here is taking a piece of land and bringing it back. Other people are looking out for us with the forest and our environment and our water and everything, and we're all doing everything that we can possibly do. And it's really important to see how this process can really wake us all up to our inner divinity, however you want to put it. And it has nothing to do with religion as we see it in the everyday world. It's become so conflictive out there. Most of the wars are religious holy wars. Politics does nothing but divide us. We need a new way to think about life. We need a new way to see ourselves, our place in this world, and in reality itself. And I think if we can do that, we'll have a really good shot at saving ourselves, because right now we cannot continue to do the game the way we've been doing it. If we continue down this road, we're done for. It's not going to work. we have to back up, reevaluate, get away from the corporate news and start going into the independent media sources like this, my magazine. There's a bunch of radio shows out there, YouTubes. If you get in there and do your work, and it takes work, it takes a lot of work to get out there and find out what's going on, and it takes a certain amount of courage too, and that takes heart, which is actually courage is the French word for courage. It takes a lot of courage, a lot of determination, and a lot of will, and that's what we're missing in this world. You know, a lot of us, we know what to do. We know the right thing to do. We just don't have the will to do it. Apathy will be the thing that will bury us if we're not careful. So becoming an activist, doing events like this, talking to people, getting people to think. Like, I'm not necessarily wanting to tell somebody what to think. That's going to be up to them after they get the information. I just want people to think. Start thinking instead of just sitting around letting information come into you from a corporate media source, and that all have an agenda. And we read our history books, but history is written by the victors. We have to remember this and start reaching out for new information and new ways to live and new ways to be. And I think I could probably go on for quite a while, but sure. Imagine this is another area where science can really help us. This is in biology. A friend of actually Michael and ours, Bruce Lipton. He's an amazing person. Just look him up. Matter of fact, if you look up Bruce Lipton and Tom Campbell, it'll pull up an amazing conversation they had. But what they found in biology is something really, really unique and really important, because if you want to know what's going on in the world and what is happening, what are we doing? It looks so chaotic. But there's something that happens in nature that can maybe clarify this a little bit. We all know about the caterpillar becoming a butterfly. And we've just accepted that as a transformational analogy, a metaphor for our inner transformation. But what sciences have been doing lately is looking at right when the caterpillar, for unbeknownst reason to himself, starts hanging upside down and making a chrysalis. Now, inside that chrysalis is, if you open it up at a certain point, it's just goop. It's so chaotic that you would think there's no life form there at all because it's complete chaos. But what they know now is they have imaginal cells strategically placed throughout that chaos. And those imaginal cells hold the pattern of the butterfly. And around those imaginal cells, they know now that all of the other cells start forming to it to form the butterfly. And I think the reason this is so important is because we are imaginal cells. What you're doing is an imaginal cell doing this, because you're creating not what was, not what is, but what you know can be. And if we all do this, we can create a better world by going inside, because we know that we can do something much, much better. We are imaginal cells that could be creating a much better world around us. And as we look at the chaos around us, remembering that that's the old caterpillar regime breaking down, and it should. Everything should break down at this point and reform itself into something completely new. So when somebody tells me, well, maybe we could fix this, I said, no, we don't want to fix something that got us in this position in the first place. We have to really, really think about dismantling this whole thing we call our civilization and how we do things. Like, if it's too big to fail, you know, if it's too big to fail, it shouldn't even be. You know, we need smaller units, smaller communities coming together and being more reliant on each other. So that's the imaginal cells. So I think that would probably do for what I have to say today. And if you want to know any more about us, lotusguide.com, and Michael always has a section in here where he writes about the Golden Road Television, And I always have a section, Rahasi Uncensored. The last one was, why should we be questioning our answers? It's easy. Almost all the answers we've ever been given, I'm old enough now to see that they're wrong. Everything I've been told by well-meaning parents, professors, teachers, priests, and preachers, and historians ends up not being the truth. And as we dig deeper, it gets dismantling and a little scary sometimes, but this is the adventure of being a spiritual warrior, a spiritual activist, and going out there and participating in life. So thank you very much. Anything else? All right, thank you very much.
Now that was, a little talk that I gave up in Mount Shasta. And we're going to be giving these little talks a lot because we need to wake people up. And people have not been listening. I'm going to play another little clip, and I'm sorry for those of you who have listened and watched these clips before on YouTube, but it's really important. People have died to say the things that they've said. I'm going to start out with just a little clip from what President Eisenhower told us just before he left office, and we didn't listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed four major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development. Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Okay, now that was Eisenhower's final departing speech, and he made it very clear that there was a military-industrial complex evolving at that time that was probably going to take over if we weren't careful and if we didn't pay attention. Well, we didn't pay attention. Everything that he said in that speech has come true many, many times over. Now think about this. We live on this planet, and at that time, most people, if you spoke about UFOs or aliens, they just thought you were some kind of a nut. Well, now 80% of the people that are questioned say that they do believe that there's life in other planets. 70% believe that we've been visited. And if you get right down to it, we've been visited for the last few thousand years. The Upanishads, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana. If you read my book, To Believe or Not to Believe, The Social and Neurological Consequences of Belief Systems, you'll notice that the last one-third of the book, I talk about where did our religions come from? Our religions come from us misinterpreting beings from another planet and seeing them as gods. Then the priesthood took hold, and here we are today, passing the plate around and asking for more money for churches that are already have billions and billions of dollars, collecting money from poor people all over the planet. This is not the way to go. Every war that we've been in, without almost any exceptions, has been a holy war, which is the epitome of an oxymoron. There are no such thing as holy wars. What we do is we have a war, and we make a deal with the state, and the state makes a deal with the religions. The religions of the world sanctify the war, the wars, and call it a holy war, and we're fighting for God, and it's easier to get people out there fighting for God than what we're really fighting for, resources. And then the state gives the church dispensation on not paying taxes. This deal's been going on for centuries. But here we are today with a lot more education, a lot more knowledge about what's going on interplanetary-wise. And we are being visited. And Eisenhower, even though he couldn't say anything, if you really listen to what he's saying that we're being dominated by a very powerful force. Now, in this next little thing I want you to listen to, this is by JFK, and this is from the speech that got him killed. Actually, the speech is pretty long, but I just took one little segment out of it. And in this issue of Lotus Guide, which you can read online at lotusguide.com, I actually wrote an article called Rahasi Uncensored, Questioning Our Answers. Why should we be questioning our answers? Well, the article will explain that if you go to the website and you can read the magazine online, or if you're almost anywhere in Northern California, you can pick up an issue. Now, this speech by JFK, I really wish we would have listened, because it wasn't a speech, it was a prophecy. Listen to what he has to say, then we'll get back to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence in the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Okay, so let's get into it a little bit here. Let's go back in time. Let's go back in our history and really think about how this probably got started. And this, I only have about a half an hour here, so we can't go too much in depth because this is a monstrous amount of literature. But if we go back briefly to pre-Sumerian cultures, we know now from the Sumerian tablets that we have been visited by an advanced race of beings, the Anunnaki, and they came here to do some mining, get some of our resources, probably some exploration. And it seems like their planet, Nibiru, comes around every 3,600 years. NASA told us in 1987 that they discovered this planet, and the next day, we still have the newspaper article, fortunately, but the next day, everything was removed, blanked out, silenced, and there hasn't been a word from them since, except a few whistleblowers have stepped forth. And we know now that there has to be a reason why Switzerland, the United States, and the Vatican have infrared telescopes down at the Antarctic. Why did the president go down there? John Kerry. Why did two world religious leaders who haven't, those two religions haven't spoken in over 1,000 years, and they met down at the Antarctic? What is happening down there? Could it be that the aliens have never left this planet? And we have new alien races that have come and made new deals. And to tell you the truth, I think we live in a universe, or at least this galaxy, where there's numerous, I mean, many, many, many populated planets. We're starting to find them now with our advanced technology. I think we found a little over 1,500 planets, many of them within the Goldilocks section of the solar system, making it possible to have life. So let's think about the fact that all through time we have been visited. And beginning around 1897, 1887, something like that, we started having ships appear in the sky that people were talking about. All through the early 20s and 30s, there were sightings. And it really seems like the evidence is speaking pretty clearly that Hitler and his people were contacted by alien forces and made some kind of a deal with them. And they built bases. We know they built bases down in the Antarctic. We know now that Hitler didn't commit suicide. Do you know why we even think that he committed suicide? The only thing that we ever got as far as proof that he committed suicide came from the propaganda machine that belonged to Hitler. So that alone should tell you that somebody else is in control of all of this. Now, with Operation Paperclip, we brought over hundreds, if not thousands, of Germans, high-level military officials, scientists, researchers. We brought over all of their technology. And Wernher von Braun, he's the one that started NASA, ran it for many, many years. And one of the last things that he told his secretary was that there was a plan, a plot, to take over this planet. And they were going to use different modes to bring that about. One of them was always having an enemy, like the terrorist. When that ran out, when that played out its maximum potential, they would have another way. And the last way would be a phony alien invasion, which we could actually play that too, that little clip from Ronald Reagan. It had a metaphor in there, but you could almost take that literally, I think. So if the aliens were in touch with the Germans, and the Germans became the fascists that we came to know throughout World War II, and we brought all of them over here in the late 40s and 50s, installed them into every agency. I mean, the CIA, that's how it got its start. So now here we are today wondering, how in the world did we get into this fix? Well, we got into this fix because we installed the people that we thought were our enemy and the banking system. Remember, the banking system is on top of this whole thing. So what do we do now? What do we do now? Well, let's look out at the world, okay? As I look out in the world, I see pretty clearly that the Illuminati, the Deep State, Cabal, whatever you want to call it, it changes its name along the way sometimes, it's had two modes of control. One was religion, and religion worked for a long time, and it always does with superstitious people, that you can get them to believe anything simply by believing it, and you tell them that they get a reward for believing it with no evidence. Of course, the reward's always in the next life, but those days are coming to a close. There's been too many cases of sociopaths and pedophiles coming out of the closet, homosexuality within the ranks of the priesthood that they're not even supposed to be. They're supposed to be celibate, my goodness. But that takes years of training, and maybe celibacy does work if you have years and years and years of training with masters. But they don't get years of training. They go to school. They just take classes. So if religion isn't working because people are waking up and becoming a little more conscious of what's really going on, this only leaves one other control method, financial. And that's why we're seeing today what's going on with the manipulation of our currencies, with the banks, all of the corruptness. Remember 2008 when we put up billions of dollars to bail them out because they were too big to fail? Well, they were too big to exist is the deeper truth. So if the religion, the control of the religion is starting to fade, which it is, now they're concentrating on the financial. So we need to concentrate on the financial and start thinking of different ways we can start unplugging from it. I was talking with Michael Tellinger briefly, and I'll be doing an interview with him about Ubuntu. There's many, many systems popping up, crypto coins, Bitcoin. People are going in the right direction to try to get away from what's going on in the financial arena. The Federal Reserve is not federal. There's no reserve. They're corrupt, immoral, broken, and actually it has worked perfectly. They planned this. They planned to siphon off all of our money and get us to take that money, that worthless money, and sell them our land, goods, and our labor. And they knew that this day would come when it would all collapse. All Ponzi schemes collapse. When people start waking up and losing faith in the Ponzi scheme, or you start running out of people because the millennials aren't buying into this system, if you start running out of people that aren't willing to put more money and time and effort into the scheme, it will start collapsing. And then people start wanting their money out. And that's what's happening right now. People want their money back. And a lot of people that's going to get their money back are finding out that it's not there. It's off in some offshore account, never to be seen again. You know, and these people don't go to jail. Think about it. With all of the things that happened in 2008, who went to jail? The whistleblowers. The only guy that went to jail was Bernie Madoff, and the only reason he went to jail is because he pulled the same scam on the rich people, on the elites. He did it on the wrong people. If he'd have done it on just the regular, everyday people like us, he'd be okay today. But instead, he messed with the wrong people. So what are we going to do today now? Where do we go from here? Well, remember my little talk that I played at the beginning of this? This is a holographic projection, and it really looks clear that this is a holographic projection. Matter of fact, I'm going to play a little clip from Professor James Gates, and he puts it pretty clear. Now, keep in mind that this is a panel discussion, and Neil deGrasse is there and a few other people. So he sort of blows Neil deGrasse's mind, and I think that's pretty difficult to do usually. So let's listen to Professor Gates explain this equation that is embedded deeply, not only in our computer systems, but in the very fabric of life on the atomic level, especially dealing with supersymmetry.
So where has this pursuit taken you?
Oh, my God.
Where have you landed?
Why would you ask that?
I'm asking you that here and now. It's New York City. It's okay. March 7th.
Well, partly it's taken to these very strange images that are behind your head right now. These are pictures of equations. I've been, for the last 15 years, trying to answer the kinds of questions that my colleagues here have been raising. And what I've come to understand is that there are these incredible pictures that contain all the information of a set of equations that are related to string theory. And it's even more bizarre than that, because when you then try to understand these pictures, you find out that buried in them are computer codes just like the type that you find in a browser when you go surf the web. And so I'm left with the puzzle of trying to figure out whether I live in the Matrix or not.
Wait, you're blowing my mind at this moment. So are you saying your attempt to understand the fundamental operations of nature leads you to a set of equations that are indistinguishable from the equations that drive search engines and browsers on our computers?
That is correct. So,
Wait. I have to just be silent for a minute here. So you're saying as you dig deeper, you find computer code writ in the fabric of the cosmos?
Into the equations that we want to use to describe the cosmos, yes.
Computer code.
Computer code, strings of bits of ones and zeros.
It's not just sort of resembles computer code, you're saying it is computer code.
It's not even just is computer code, it's a special kind of computer code that was invented by a scientist named Claude Shannon in the 1940s. That's what we find very, very deeply inside the equations that occur in string theory, and in general in systems that we say are supersymmetric.
Okay.
Time to go home, I think. I mean, where are we going to go? So are you saying we are all just, there's some entity that programmed the universe, and we're just expressions of their code?
Well, I didn't say that. Some of those
like the Matrix? That's what you said.
Some of those codes are showing on the screen behind you right now. They don't look like codes, but these pictures, which we call adinkras, are graphical representations of sets of equations that are based on codes. So this is, in fact, to answer your question more directly, I have, in my life, come to a very strange place because I never expected that the movie The Matrix might be an accurate representation of the place in which I live.
Now, if you really want to get into this a little bit deeper, Bruce Lipton had a conversation with Thomas Campbell. And if you put in Bruce Lipton, Tom Campbell, it should pull it up. What they did is they dropped by a friend's house, and the friend asked if they could video their conversation. And they were just sitting in a couple of lawn chairs or something, having a casual conversation. Now, Bruce Lipton, he's a pioneering, cutting-edge biologist, microbiologist, researcher. He's the one that he probably changed the way that they had to write biology books. The word epigenetics, he changed everything around from the important thing not being so much nature, but also nurture, which is very important because that releases us from being a victim of our genetics. We can change our lives by changing our thoughts and actions. Now, Thomas Campbell, he is a NASA scientist, and he's deep into the simulation and the holographic universe. So look that conversation up sometime, and you will be amazed, because at the end of the conversation, if you finish the whole thing, at the very end, they just look at each other and realize that that was a moment and probably could never happen again. It's just one of those things that just happened to happen. So, now looking at the world, what do we do today? Okay, if this is a simulation, a holographic universe, then how can we use this information to our advantage? Because, trust me, the powers that be, the Illuminati, the Cabal, certain elites in our government, they've known this for a long, long time. And they probably are learning how to manipulate the image that we see as our 3D reality. And this could be what's happening with some of the chemtrails. We could be being genetically altered with GMO foods. Let's face it, our water is under attack with fluoride for many, many, many years. There's a small age group where it helps to control cavities. But that is a plot. And I know, again, I sound a little bit like a conspiracy guy, but if you don't think there's a conspiracy going on, realize what you're saying. You're saying that nobody in power, no powerful people, ever get together in private and discuss something that they don't want us to know about. They do this all the time. That's probably 99% of their conversations are in private, discussing how they can control, manipulate, and siphon off the world's wealth and stay in positions of power. You know, one of the little analogies that I use is The Wizard of Oz. And that movie is based on one thing halfway through the movie, and it's all about everybody is going to the Land of Oz, and they're going to find what they're looking for, but they're all a little bit leery of the wizard, you know, because it's this big monstrous thing and can cause everybody to get really scared. They finally get to the Land of Oz, and what happens? When they pull back the curtain, they see it's a frail old man, some psychopath pulling levers. The moment their fear dissipates, they are released. And once that fear is gone, all of that energy that you've been using to suppress the fear, handle the fear, sedate the fear, all of that energy starts coming out in a robust way, and you find yourself becoming a spiritual warrior. This is not what they want. So this is what's behind fluoride, because fluoride will calcify your pineal gland, and your pineal gland is what reaches out and pulls in higher information, or as Thomas Campbell and Professor Gates would say, pulls in a higher aspect of the data stream. So you're being downloaded by a data stream of information that's more pure if you can keep your system pure, your body, your mind, your pineal gland. And then it gets into releasing yourself and dismantling some of your belief filters. This is what's behind my book when I wrote To Believe or Not to Believe. It's about dismantling your belief systems, because what they do is they filter out. And I remember when I was interviewing Andrew Newberg, he's a neurophysicist, neuroscientist, and I asked him, so what happens to a person that's a religious or a political extremist, where they're out there on the edge and way beyond what we recognize in everyday life? Let's face it, I mean, I've never seen a virgin give birth. I've never seen anybody rise from the dead. And whether it's true or not is completely beside the point. What's important here is when you have a belief that is not based upon something that you can put your fingers on, something you can smell, taste, feel, or some historical evidence or some scientific evidence, something to let your mind assimilate that information and digest it, what does your mind have to do? It has to reinforce the belief that it's true, and then it starts having to reinforce filters that filter out any information that contradicts that. This is cognitive dissonance, because once that's set up, your life is about finding and reinforcing your previously held beliefs. That's why I think it's important to let a kid grow up. Let him get 7, 8, 9, 10 years old before you start preaching to him. Give him a chance to make up his own mind. And because if you start at a very early age, it gets a little difficult. I remember I grew up in West by God, Virginia. And my parents would take me to the church every Sunday. And when I got to be 5 years old, they took me to Sunday school. So I'm sitting in Sunday school the first Sunday, and the Sunday school teacher is teaching all of us little kids out of the Bible, and it was Genesis. And we get all the way through a good portion of Genesis, and it ended with God was very well pleased with his creation. Now, I wasn't old enough to see that there was two creation stories. That came many, many years later. But the next Sunday, I go back, and I'm thinking, well, okay, there's a God. I mean, the power of people in my life, my parents, preachers, teachers, most of our adult friends were telling me, oh, yeah, there's a God that created you. I'm thinking, okay, well, sounds good to me, especially if he's really well pleased. This could work out really well. So I went to Sunday school the next Sunday, and I'm sitting down, and he proceeds to tell us that, well, God wasn't exactly well pleased. As a matter of fact, he caused the flood. And I'm going, whoa, wait a minute here. And I raise my little hand, and the teacher, preacher, said, yeah, can I help you? I said, well, if he was really well pleased with this, why is he trying to drown us all now? And the teacher called my parents down. My parents came down, and the teacher said, you know, I think your son is just too young for this class. But I don't think that was it at all. I was asking questions, and it seems like I've been asking questions all my life, because now I'm to the age to where I can truly see that most everything I've been told has been a lie. And it's been to mislead me, to suppress me, to guide me, to coax me, to nudge me, to keep me forever unconscious. And the more I can question, those questions are important. Even if you don't get an answer, the process, the mental cognitive process of questioning an answer is really important. And sometimes you can't really tell this. It takes a while. Time just has to pass. And unfortunately, some of the young people being born into this, it's like you're trying to explain what water feels like to a fish. They don't know what it felt like before all of the suppression and the madness, and And I think a lot of mind control is happening too. And we could get into that on maybe one of our other shows, but let's try to stay focused on this for a moment here. And I would say at this point, we all need to start reaching out and listening to independent media. And BBS Radio has some really good people on here, myself included, actually. I'm trying to bring really good information that I've learned from experience, not things that I believe or sort of feel might be true, or I'm intuiting them or I'm channeling them. These are things that are hooked up to reality, the science of really looking into the fabric of space and time and the matter that is all around us. But we have to be careful even when we're doing that. Stop and think about this. If you're looking at reality as a piece of paper, an 8.5 by 10 piece of typing paper, okay, that piece of paper, if you take the fact that we're only experiencing 3 or 4 dimensions of at least 11 dimensions and rip off those extra dimensions, now you have a pretty skinny sheet of paper. Now take that and turn it sideways and realize that, okay, if that's the electromagnetic scale, what we're seeing is this tiny, tiny piece in the middle of the light waves, a little bit of radio waves and ultraviolet. Some of our technology has opened up a little bit. But the rest of the electromagnetic frequency, we don't know anything about. We have no idea. So you rip off both sides of that, and now you have a teeny piece of paper that you can hardly see. And then you have to consider the fact that we've recently discovered that 95-97% of the matter and energy in our universe is dark matter and dark energy, and we know absolutely nothing about it. We see the gravitational effects, and that's about it. So when you get down to what we're really experiencing of that big sheet of paper, it's a little teeny piece that you can't even hardly see anymore. Now, when you take that little bit of information, data stream that's coming in, and you start factoring in the fact that we use our belief systems and start filtering out everything that we don't believe, what you're left with is, at best, usually misleading. So as we get deeper into this, I think we're going to have to listen to our scientists a lot more than we've been listening to them, because the technology that we're coming up with is pretty detailed information that's reaching out and exploring these inner depths and inner realms. So here we are towards the end of another program, and thanks for listening, because I've been wanting to do this for a while, because everybody that's listening to my interviews, you should know a little bit about me, where I'm coming from. If you want to find out more, you can look at some of the archived interviews I've done here. You can go to lotusguide.com, where we have an amazing amount of information on alternative health and living and science. You can watch the archive programs here on BBS Radio. You can also see some in-depth interviews on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/lotusguide. And if you have any questions you want to email me, you can email me at rahasya@usa.com. That's rahasya@usa.com. And if you want to know more about supporting this endeavor, the show that you're listening to right now is a nonprofit show, so your donations are tax-deductible donations, and you can do that at www.spiritualactivist.com. You can make that donation there, and it's greatly appreciated, because it'll keep this show going, because I didn't want to put any commercials on this show. I want it to be open to the public, uninterrupted, and I didn't want any biasness going on or anybody thinking that I'm talking about anything to support advertisement. This is truly a community-based show. So thank you, and I'll be seeing you again in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much.